said, let us make man in our image. That's a whole different story.
That's a different us.
Well, no, well, yeah, but let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for Sandy. And I thank you that she did it. That what an example to everybody else. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord, for her commitment to this congregation and the service she's been to you over the years, and her heart and her growth, her spiritual growth. Bless her. She has blessed so many people. We ask you this morning to speak to us about politics and religion in Yeshua's name. Amen. Be seated. And I mentioned a second ago, I got to get all my stuff sorted out because I had lots of stuff up here. I have a Jerusalem Post. I bought this myself in Tiberias in 1991. Why do I bring this? You'll see it in a moment. I have all this stuff today and not enough time to do it all. You will be to lunch on time, and Sandy's family goes first to lunch. I got to get all this stuff out of here because politics. Wait a minute, we have the flag of a country draped on the front of the Bema today. Now, I was kind of raised in a way to think you don't really mix, you know, politics and religion and stuff like that. Are we mixing politics and religion? Yeah. Why do we do that? We're not, huh? Okay, well, look at that. A divided opinion. What do you know? What about that? I'll tell you what. This is a political. This is the flag of a country, which is a member of the UN. It's a country. Okay, and we're putting it this morning on our Bema. That's kind of mixing politics in with stuff. And for those of us or you, however you want to say that don't like that, just be quiet and stand by and watch all of your freedoms go away. Did you hear that this week a federal court declared that the National Day of Prayer to be unconstitutional? Yeah. Did you get that one? Okay, just stand by and do nothing, and that's what's going to, everything's going to be taken, because you have to do something political. There's some that are doing it. If you don't, you will lose. Okay, do it peacefully, lovingly, as Yeshua would do, but let your hearts and voices be known, please, because this is our last chance. Well, I say that because I'm going to make a really bold statement here. Obaldo liked it. I said it on the radio in Montevideo. And, you know, when you're on the radio, I don't like being on those kind of things because I can't have all my notes of what I'm going to do. I still don't know that part yet. But they ask you, like, cold turkey questions. You just kind of respond. And one of the comments was, I said, God is a Zionist. We're going to talk about that, a little bit of what that means. And the pastors on the radio show kind of brightened up, and you could see the wheels turning, and they go, yeah, he is. I go, okay. If he's a Zionist, so we should be one too. That's very unpopular. In fact, there's a UN resolution against this. We will talk about that briefly. Politics and religion. Well, God talks about politics. He talks about nations. God speaks about and has a plan for Israel. Are you aware of that? Other nations too. There's a list of what he prophesied about the nations and about Israel. God gives, we've already prayed this morning, God gives laws. God gives laws. He gives values. Okay? There's some conflict going on with these right about now, huh? He gives morals, ethics, ethical instruction, instructions about behavior, right and wrong. He declares what it is and the consequences. And God has made covenants. Covenants are his irrevocable promises, okay? They're eternal. They're forever. And the basis of this political flag has to do with a covenant, the Abrahamic covenant. This last year, we walked through the Torah portions in Genesis, and I got to tell you, it's stated about 7 or 8 times, the Abrahamic covenant. It's just stated again and again and again and again. God called Abraham, and the promise went to him through Isaac and through Jacob. And the promise had to do with a piece of land. I give you this land. And the promise was to be promised land and chosen people to do the work and the purpose of God in history. To be a blessing to those, some, and not a blessing to others. And there's two sides to that coin. Okay, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promise was the land. That's in dispute. The land. Promise of a people, the Jewish people, will eternally exist. You know, some nations come and some nations go. Jewish people will always be, God said. There's a purpose. That's what this book is all about. There's a purpose in all of this. It has to do with the people and the land, by the way. And there's a blessing for those who bless. God said, I will bless those that bless you to Abraham, and I will curse those that curse you. Well, just take a look at history. It's happening today as we speak. You know, in reading some of the things that happened just before 1948, if you read the British authors who know the Bible, they will say, several will say, you know, when we went against Israel, we lost the empire. That's it. The British Empire went down the tube, just like that, when they turned against Israel. They made promises to Jewish people and didn't keep them. They went back on their word, and God said, okay. And their power diminished. They could have been in a place of great influence. So we have our prophets in the Bible. Normally, okay, this is a celebration of Yom HaTzmaut, Israel's Independence Day. And it's not in the Bible. The date is not given to us. It's actually this Monday. And every year I have to deal with this. I am older than Israel. Older than Israel. You know what? I know. that is a prophetic issue because this happened. All these things happened in my lifetime. All the things that people dreamed about it and wrote about it and longed for. A whole series of prophetic events have happened very quickly in my lifetime. There's only a couple more to go. Are you ready? That's the question. Are you ready? The prophets accurately predicted in the scriptures a worldwide scattering of the Jewish people to all the nations and a return of God's people to the land of Israel, the very land it once had, in the end of times, in the end of times. This is that time. This is that time. God speaks more about Israel. He gives more prophecies about Israel than all other nations combined. So it's kind of political, okay? Talking about a nation. There's divine promise. There's promised land and chosen people. And they all go together to paint a picture of who the Messiah is and prepare the world for his coming. I want to remember today, normally what I do is go through the 42,000 verses that promise, it's not really that many, but it's close. It takes an hour and a half to go just to go through the verses of God's promise of the Jewish people coming back to the land. Just those take an hour and a half to do. I have that on tape somewhere. I'm doing it a little different today. I'm going to look at a couple of the forgotten miracles. Miracles have happened that people kind of forget about. If you start digging and looking, you'll find stuff that's absolutely amazing. That's why I brought my newspaper. When I bought this, I had no clue how important that paper would be. Some miracles. The Yemenite Jews. Okay, well, you know what? Let's do this. I'm going to rearrange these notes a little bit. I'm going to go to this part first. Theodore Herzl. And then it ends with bad news. It's kind of bad. Don't go away. Okay, good. We'll do it this way. Theodore Herzl. That's political. He was secular. He wasn't necessarily religious. He was born in 1860, about the time the Civil War was starting here. He's in Budapest, in Europe. He had a doctorate in law. He didn't like being an attorney. He got that from the University of Vienna, very well-educated man. But he left law to become a journalist because he felt he could influence people as a journalist. Boy, I guess that's true, isn't it? That's true. He covered the Dreyfus trial. Not time to go into that, but it was about a French army officer that was falsely accused of a crime in which he got of treason. He got life imprisonment. It's all because of anti-Semitism. And Herzl saw this. He's in Europe. You've got to keep in mind, and I have all the quotes, of all these Jewish leaders who are saying, we are German. We are safe. We speak German. We are comfortable. We have good jobs. What can happen to us? Herzl was a man of insight. Actually, God was speaking to him and through him. And he saw in this the future of the Jewish people, anti-Semitism. Their crime is that they're Jewish. And in his heart, he was thinking, by the way, Dreyfus was sentenced to life imprisonment on Devil's Island. He later was cleared. But Herzl saw the handwriting on the wall for anti-Semitism of the future. He came to believe this, that the only answer to anti-Semitism was the restoration of Jewish statehood. This is in the late 1800s. Nobody's thinking about this, okay? He began to publish papers. There's thousands of pages that you can look at, okay? But he's a writer now. He's publishing. Nobody had thought of this. Here's what he said, okay? A few quotes from these thousands of papers. Nobody has ever thought to look for the promised land where it really is. It's really close. He's saying it's right here. It's right there. It's close. Why? Well, you know, in 70 AD, if you read what the land looked like back then, it was dreary. Nothing grew there. Nobody wanted it. It was swamps and desert. That's the promised land. Until Jews came back, that's how it looked. If you read Mark Twain, his book, Innocence Abroad, I think it's called, he said, why would anybody come here? It's ugly. You go today and we go, oh, this is the most beautiful place I've ever seen in my life. What happened? Fulfilled prophecy. God predicted certain things would happen when Jews were there. Well, nobody ever thought to look to the promised land. That was it. It's it. Israel, the land of Israel. Here's what he said. We have a role to play. Now look at the insight spiritually that this man has, because the hand of God was moving upon him. You wait till the end of this. We have a role to play in the history of mankind. Only in our state can we educate our people for the lives that lie ahead and the things that lie ahead. This idea, this dream, listen to this, what he said, has become a powerful obsession. It possesses me. And when I walk, I think about it. When I stand, when I sit down, when I lie down, when I'm in the street, when I'm at the table, when I dream about it. It was overwhelming to him. He said, I have been pounding away for some time at a work of tremendous magnitude. There were two. One of these is gigantic enough, but there were two that he was being spoken to about. He realizes the magnitude of founding a country that nobody wants to found. He said, I don't know if I can do it. That's good. Okay. It's a mighty dream, he said. It has saturated me to the very limits of my consciousness. He was overwhelmed. It goes with me wherever I go. It hovers behind my ordinary talk. It peers at me over my shoulders at my work. It overwhelms and intoxicates me. It's all I can think about. I believe for me, life has ceased and history has begun. He's in a transition. It's not real, but it's in him. The vision. Okay. Let's listen to this. I believe that a wondrous generation of Jews, this is the late 1800s, will spring into existence. The Maccabees will rise again, and we shall at last live as free men on our own soil and die in peace in our own homes. That was the dream. On August 24th, 1897, he had a meeting. Okay, it was a Zionist Congress. It was held in Basel. It was the first official worldwide gathering of Jews since the year 70. They got together and started talking. They established an organization called the World Zionist Organization. He became its president. At that meeting, they adopted a flag right here. Now, why the look of this flag? Well, the Star of David, the Magen David, that actually means Shield of David. Tradition has it, that this was the symbol on David's shield. It didn't have any meaning. It was just a symbol, but it was on his shield. It's tradition. Later in Jewish history, it had positive meaning, a negative meaning, and so on. They go, you know what? On the flag, we want the shield of David. It's symbolic because it connected the Jewish people, the land of Israel, to the Davidic covenant, to the king, to the Messiah. They're not even aware of this stuff. And the rest of it, how did they come up with the rest of how it looked? These are secular men. They said, you know, it should kind of look like a tallit, like a prayer shawl, because the flag of Israel should be symbolic of prayer and of God's promise to King David. Sounds religious to me. That's where it came from. They also established a national anthem, Hatikva, the hope. It was done there, not later. It was like, no, wait a minute, how prophetic are these things? How prophetic is this stuff? They're being prophetic without being aware of it. He stated this. If I were to sum up the Basel Congress in a few words, which I dare not make public, he said, I would say at Basel we founded the Jewish state. Then he says this, in 50 years, everyone will see it. Exactly 50 years later, the UN recognized the right of the Jewish people to have their own state. Exactly 50 years later. He died in 1904. He's compared to kind of like Moses. He never got to the land. He didn't make it. Or is that true? Well, hang on. On August 17th, 1949, his body was flown to Israel. And catch this. He was buried on a hilltop in Jerusalem named Mount Herzl. How cool. How cool. Well, that was the first part of the vision. He ignited a vision which showed a need. The only place Jews can be safe is in their own land. That's impossible unless you read the Bible and realize that God made promises that they will go back someday to their very own land again. People began to look at that. They go, well, do we dare go there? Because, you know, replacement theology was alive and well. It was impossible. Oh, yeah? God said. You know, that what this shows us is how literal this is. How literal it is. I mean, you look at this, it goes right down to the exact wording. But he had a second vision, which you were never taught about this. They won't bring this up in the Jewish Community Center. Why? Well, listen to the vision. Before he died, catch this. He shared two things with his closest friends. One of them was this. He said, at age 12, okay, Messiah appeared to me with clouds and with Moses. Messiah said to me, catch this, go and announce to all Jews that I shall soon come and perform great and awesome deeds for my people and for all mankind. And he connected that to he will come to Israel. Wow, how prophetic. He wasn't religious. Look at part two. He had envisioned leading a great movement, voluntary and honorable, of bringing Jews and Christians together. We would call that the Messianic movement of today. He had a vision for that. Okay? By the way, so did Eliezer Ben Yehuda, who revived the Hebrew language. You know, he was secular. And he said, it's for all Jews. All Jews should speak Hebrew and come to Israel, even those that believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. They're Jews. He had no problem with seeing you who are Jewish believers as Jews, including you. But you see, but they don't talk about that part. He was given a glimpse, I think, of the future and a part of the restoration of Israel, because I'm going to make a bold statement later that's kind of political. Okay, now that's so far the good news. You know, in 1947, the UN made this declaration. Years past, we've played it to you. You know, we have the tapes of the UN voting. Was it Uruguay that they made the final, the deciding vote, the one that made it through? They let us know that down there. Okay. And, you know, there was a point in time where it was official, recognized by the United Nations, by the people of the world. And before that, I have here a copy of the Balfour Declaration. You know, the British ended up with the British mandate in the land of what they called Palestine because of World War I. They were fighting the Turks, the Ottoman Turkish Empire. And voila, there they are. Now they have their hands full. What do? See the movie Lawrence of Arabia, or read the book. It's all about what they did and didn't do correctly. But out of that came the Balfour Declaration, which declared an official legal document that Jewish people, I'll read it, His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for Jewish people in Israel, and will use their best endeavors to facilitate and achieve of this object. It be clearly understood that nothing shall be done which shall prejudice the civic and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political aims enjoyed by Jews in any other country. And the bottom line says, I'd be grateful if you would let the Zionist Federation know about this. It was a law. Okay, that was in 1917, the end of World War I. So all of a sudden, there you have a step in that in the right direction. And then the British went back on their word and started making promises. You see, they had made promises to the Arab tribes in Arabia that if you came and joined us to fight against the Turks, we'll give you this land. They said the same thing to the Jews. They were talking out of both sides of their mouth. And when push came to shove, they ended up compromising all the promises to the Jewish people. And that's when you have the influx of the Arabs coming into the land. That's why this document appears so important on the Palestinian refugee problem. We'll get to that in a moment. But what happened then is, in 1947 and 48, you have this declaration of a Jewish state. In a moment, we are going to read to you a portion of their Declaration of Independence. It's very important to hear what they said. But the bad news is this. There was another UN resolution in 1975. The UN General Assembly resolved by a two-thirds majority vote that Zionism was a form of racism. And listen to this. And racial discrimination. Israel was declared to be a racist regime in occupied Palestine. Occupied Palestine. Notice they called it Palestine. In 1975, it's Israel. They went back to the old name, Land of the Philistines. However, they seem to have no problem with the 57 Muslim states, but they have a problem with the one Jewish state. What's wrong with that picture? Lots of stuff is wrong with that picture. Okay, what is Zionism? Let me clarify. I have a long version. I'll read you the short one. Zionism. Zion was originally one of the mountains of Israel, of Jerusalem. But it very quickly came to be another name for Jerusalem itself. For example, in the Psalms of David, Jerusalem is often referred to as Zion. Furthermore, in both Jewish and Christian thought, Zion has come to represent a spiritual ideal. For most Jews today, to talk of Zionism is to talk about the return of the land and the recreation and rebuilding of the Jewish state. For such, Zionism is the embodiment of an ideal, the idea, both spiritual and practical. It's historical and biblical. I'll skip all that in the bottom line. Let's see if you're one. Okay, today, it is quite common for anyone, they be Jew or Gentile, to be called a Zionist simply because they believe in the right of the state of Israel to exist, and therefore wish to participate in her future. If you believe that Israel has a right to exist, you're a Zionist. Simple as that. The UN says that makes you a racist. Okay, that's what the UN says. That makes you a racist. Yeah, right. Oh, well. Okay. Well, now, isn't it interesting how things are going? Now, I've mentioned some of the forgotten miracles. Okay, in the course of time, what you have back then, and it's just a wonderful story, you have Jewish people. And as they write their feelings, it was magnetic. You know, they have to go there. What were they going to? A desert? A swamp? And, you know, we're told, and just last week I heard this from some uneducated person was saying, well, yeah, the Jews came in there and they pushed out all the Arabs. Wait. You got to read that document there. Most what was going on back then was that the Arab landowners were absentee. They were living in other countries. Why? Because they don't want to live in a swamp. And they sold it. The Jewish people bought this land. They paid money for the deed to the land. They didn't push anybody out. Okay? Now, wait till you hear some of this stuff in a second. They bought it. And the Arabs would laugh. They said, you guys are so stupid. You're paying this high price for this swamp. And they drained it. And they made this beautiful land. And they got malaria. A lot of them died. And it was hard work. The pioneers, it was tough. But there was a magnetic, they said, attraction to come and do this and build a country. And they began to come, prophetically fulfilling the prophecies of Isaiah and Jeremiah and so on, Ezekiel, from the four corners of the earth. And they were nobodies. But they came and they began to build a land. And it became against the law. The British said, you can't do this. And they still kept coming and kept coming. And then finally a state was formed. Now, when we read this in a few minutes, the Declaration of Independence, you have to understand that the next day, five Arab countries invaded Israel. The next day. And if you sign that document, and if you lose the war, you die. It wasn't like saying, hey, this is a good idea. You're going to die if you don't win the war. How many of you have seen the movie A Woman Called Golda? It's hard to get, but you ought to get it. There's some great, absolutely true scenes in this movie. One of them was they sat around before this began and said, okay, what are the chances of us winning this war against five Arab countries? By the way, you see, they didn't have an army. There was no army in Israel. There was no air force. They had five planes, propeller planes. Okay? And they sat around and they said, well, it's 50-50. And you know what the response was? Could be worse. That's what they said. It could be worse. It could be worse. 50-50, okay. And they went into it with that. Our army does not go into battle 50-50. I got to tell you that right now. Okay, we don't do that. They did. Some of you have been to Kibbutz Yad Mordecai. It's not far from the Egyptian border. In 1948, it was a coordinated effort from all these Arab countries. Egypt was invading from the south, Syria from the north, Iraq and Jordan from the east, and so on. Well, all this coordination. And they said, okay, we're going to start the war at 6 in the morning, and we'll meet you in Haifa for lunch. Didn't happen. Now, the Egyptians, as they started the war, these are true stories. As they started the war, it was time, okay, ready, set, okay, who's got the maps? I thought you had the maps. No, I thought you had the maps. You didn't bring maps? No, I thought you had the maps. Oh, well, can't be that hard. It's just the road that goes north. We'll follow the signs. Well, the Israelis had turned the signs all around. Okay? No maps. And they are not far from Tel Aviv. Between them and Tel Aviv is a kibbutz, Yad Mordecai. These are farmers. These are farmers. Now, I've been there. If you've been there, they still have it set up as it was then, and they had like 42 different kinds of guns with different kinds of bullets that don't fit. Okay? And that's what, they were farmers. They held off the entire Egyptian army for like 3 days. Let me ask you this. Why didn't the Egyptian army go around the kibbutz? They didn't have the map, right. No maps. It was like, well, this can't be. They can't do this to us. And they did. And story after story about this handful of untrained, there's not an army holding off the entire army. Anyway, the war was miraculous. And years later, here's some of the forgotten miracles. The Yemenite Jews. We do some Yemenite dances. The Yemenites had an unbroken tradition. They were Jewish people that lived in Yemen, but they were separate, okay, from the days of King Solomon. That's about 950 BC, okay, living in non-technical conditions. Let me describe from the book. I wrote this down. Most had never seen a car. Never seen a car, okay, or an airplane, or a telephone, etc. Yet in 1948, something suddenly happened. Catch this. Without warning, 43,000 Yemenites left their homes, their livelihood, and walked across the Arabian Peninsula. They walked across, 43,000 walked across the Arabian Peninsula to the British colony of Aden. Surprise! Where did you guys come from? Okay. Well, the British were surprised. They set up camps, tents for these people. Said, what do we do now? What do we do? They began to investigate, why are you here? And then what to do about it. Here's what they discovered. Two striking facts. Number one, the Muslim, and catch this, the Muslim Yemenite government, the authorities, had actually encouraged the Jewish community to go to Israel. Why? Catch this. They said, these are Muslims. You know, if it happened then, it can happen again. Listen to this. They said, this is the hand of God. God expelled the Jews from their land a long time ago, and now God is restoring Jews to their land. They called it their land. Can it happen again? If it happened then. And then they said, who are we then to challenge the divine will? Whoa! These are Muslim authorities. That's number one. Then they asked the Ammonite guys, okay, so why'd you leave? And they replied like this. It was time for them to go home to Israel. Centuries before, they said, we had a prophet in Yemen. I've never heard of him, okay? And he predicted that at the end of times, catch this, at the end of time, there's 43,000 of them there because of this one thing. At the end of times, before Messiah comes, they would all be transported back to the promised land miraculously on the wings of a great silver bird. They had never seen an airplane. And that's precisely what happened. The British airlifted 43,000 Yemenite Jews to Israel on silver aircraft. It was called Operation Magic Carpet. Amazing. People don't talk about this stuff. It was a miracle. A little bit bigger one happened. See, we all live in the days of the two Iraqi wars and so on. In 1950, in Operation Alibaba, was the name of it, 113,000 Iraqi Jews. Iraqi Jews. God was getting them out of Iraq. Why? Well, guess what? Because of the time in which we live, they were flown to Israel by the British, by the Americans, by the Israelis. I mean, 113,000, like in a couple of days. The Ethiopian Jews, that's why I brought my paper. Okay, now I lived in Israel for a year. I saw two of these I'm going to talk about, and I brought this today. Okay, this is one of the coolest papers in existence. You can read it, but don't take it. Okay. The headline, Ethiopian Jewry Rescued. 14,400 are flown here in a 24-hour airlift. How'd they do that? Look at this. See them in the plane? There's no seats. They took out all the seats so they could squish them all in. And they squished them all in. One 747 carried 1,043 people. Seriously. They were allowed a paper bag. That's your luggage. Okay? And you know, that's a miracle. Anyway, if you read this, there's some funny things. One of the Israeli guys in charge says, I'm glad they're not fat. They're all skinny. They're all skinny people. that helped. Okay, I was there when this took place. Okay, it happened in 24 hours, 40 flights. It was called Operation Solomon. And when the Ethiopians came in, by the way, where'd they put them? What do you do with 14 in 24 hours? Where do you put them? Well, that was just after the first Gulf War. And there were no tourists coming. And all the hotels are empty. All the hotels are empty. These guys got to go to first-class hotels, okay, because they were all empty. Now, there were some things that kind of, there's some humor with what kind of was going on. First of all, they refused to ride in elevators. They did not like elevators. They would use the fire escapes on the outside of the buildings to go up and down. They're not going in an elevator. Okay, we're not going to talk about what they thought a toilet was, because they thought it was something else. But they literally had to be educated on some of the basics. They're starting from scratch. Wow. Operation Solomon. Now, the sad part about that was, even to this day, that who they left were the Messianic Ethiopian Jews. We're trying through the movement to get them home. They left them. They're still there in camps waiting. So pray about that one. One of these days, we'll have COCAB come and share with us, but they're ready to come. They just need permission. So pray. Keep that in prayer. When did they do this? When could they do this? He did it on a Friday and Saturday. Isn't that Shabbat? You can't fly planes on Shabbat. Guess what? Guess what? What would the rabbis say about that? You're saving Jews. No problem. It's exactly what they said. They did it on Shabbat. Now think about this. The first plane landed Friday at sunset. Think about the spiritual implications. Arriving in Israel as Shabbat is coming in. I mean, think about it, the hand of God on this. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. If they come in, the first thing they hear is Shabbat Shalom. It's like, I'm in the land of Israel. Well, I was there for the influx of the Russians. Now, we had been praying for that for a long time. We had movies made and people come and spoke to us about there will be an exodus from Russia, so on and so forth. Well, it wasn't happening. A little bit here and there. But during the first Gulf War, well, I had my gas mask in my sealed room, and we went where there were 39 Scud missiles that came, and some hit close enough to our house to shake the house. All right? But you see, everybody has their eyes glued on CNN and what's happening in Iraq and who's bombing who, right? What's happening behind the scenes? At night, you see, nobody's flying El Al. Yes, they are. El Al flights are all going north to Russia. Empty, coming back full. Every night, shuttle, back and forth, back and forth. 1 million Russians coming into the land that nobody is even aware of because they're all fixated on the war, on this war. Who's going to... And they're coming in. It's like they're everywhere. And it's like this is answered prayer. It's fulfilled prophecy from the land of the north. We didn't do this because I didn't have a car. I couldn't get there. But you were allowed to go to the airport and meet them. And you were given an Israeli flag to wave and give to them and say, welcome to Israel, as they got their gas mask when they came in. I guess, yeah, we're at war. Oh, we're at war. Okay. But I mean, the people who went, it was, and same with the same with Ethiopians. It was moving because when they got off the plane, they kissed the ground and said, God bless Israel. I mean, they have nothing, a paper bag, and they're the most thankful people in the world. Well, they were everywhere. And we were up in Tiberias, and of course, they spoke Russian. And one of the jokes was, what's the second most common language in the land of Israel today? No, Hebrew. It was true because there were so many Russians. Well, what happened was this. And another interesting spiritual experience. We would sit in the little coffee shop area on the walking street, and Susan and myself and Revi and others would sit there. You could tell who the believers were. I kid you not. We would look and we could say, there's one. We had this discernment. There's one. And we would talk to them, and they were. Strangest thing. So what happened was you had an adoptive family thing. They come with a paper bag. Okay, a little teeny bag, and that's it. They have nothing. And so we could go to an absorption center and get a family. Take them home for Shabbat dinner. Well, it's getting time for Passover. So we came, and it was making friends. And Revi had a car. And so we took them to the supermarket. And we're filling up baskets. They didn't realize that this was their food. All of a sudden, it dawned on them. They just started crying, and all of a sudden, the people would care for them and love them and do something for them. And the absorption center gave us this address. We went there, and guess who came to the door? The lady who was a believer, okay? And a lot of her family wasn't, so we invited them into our Seder. There was about 35 or 40 people there, and as we began, we asked this question. To these Russian people. How many of you tonight are here, this is your first Seder ever? Every hand went up. I got to tell you, to sit there and realize I'm having a Seder with people from Russia who are immigrants that have never had one in their life, and their first one is in the land of Israel, and it's a messianic Seder. I go, oh, Lord, thank you. And you walk through, and this is about Yeshua, and this is the blood of Yeshua, the third cup. They thought, oh, yeah, okay, this is good. It was like they loved it. They loved it. Okay? I mean, the Lord set these things up. It was just amazing, building bridges of love. Of love. Okay, the modern Zionist movement the idea of Herzl, and the modern messianic movement, that's us, are two segments of the hand of God in history. He's bringing them together in the land of Israel. When I lived there, there were five messianic congregations. There's 120 now. Okay, 116 are led by Israelis in their Hebrew-speaking congregations. This is good news. Okay? God is doing this revival in the land. In the land. It's two parts of him orchestrating events to bring together the final stage before the second coming. God's plan, God's purpose for his people. Parallel movements orchestrated by the hand of God coming together for the final restoration and redemption. Preparing for the arrival of the king. Because in Yeshua's prophecies, he comes to Jerusalem, as you know, but it's business as usual. Shabbat is going on. All these things. There are Jewish people that say, Baruch Abba Hashem Adonai when he comes. They speak Hebrew. Israel is the stage for all these final prophetic events. I have the script right here. The stage is set. The Jewish people are the players. And they're all in place. In the surrounding countries, they're all in place. Everyone that's named, every single one. The curtain's about to be raised. And the drama, the greatest drama of all history, is about to begin. The return of the king to establish his eternal kingdom in Jerusalem, where he will rule and reign and sit on the throne of David as promised the Davidic covenant in the script. In the script. And Yeshua's question was, when he gave those prophecies, are you ready? Are you ready? Because when he comes, it's suddenly. You can't say, well, it's suddenly. Are you ready? That was his question. Are you ready? Be ready. God's a Zionist. He's into politics. He really is. There's an overlap of spirituality and political things and history with Jewish people in the land of Israel. You can't separate it. You can't. You can't. And we're a part of it. And if you discover today that you're a Zionist, support Israel. Plant trees. Go visit it. Send people. Okay, be a part of what he's doing. He's end times. And recognize, okay, I'm not Jewish. That's not my land. I love it. It's not mine. I like to go visit it. But if you're Jewish, that's your land. If you've never been, you know, if somebody gave me some land, let's say in Washington, I'd at least go look at it. I'd go look at it. Go visit your land. You just might like it. You just might. I do. I got to tell you, I was living on a shoestring budget, didn't have a car, didn't have nothing. The Lord, I lived in a house that had a view of the Sea of Galilee. I saw the sunset over the Golan Heights every single morning. It's like I'm living in a palace. Okay, but it was the land. Okay, God let me do that. It was a spiritual experience every single morning. Every single morning. The land is the most beautiful land on the face of the earth because God has blessed it, because he's blessing his people. If you bless his people, you will be blessed. This is a no-brainer, okay? Look at the nations who are not blessing and see what becomes of them. And you know what? We're going to be one of those. We're doing that right now. Pray for your government. Let your voice be known and heard. This is the last chance to stand up. You know, do it in peace and love, but do it. And be vocal and write letters and show up at events and be nice. Okay, Dolly, I wanted a young Jewish person. Come on up here. She's going to read to us a part of the Declaration of Independence. Now, their preamble is really long. We're going to not read that. It's historical. Okay, Dolly, here's what you read. You read... Oh, yeah, I need the microphone. Hang on a second. I want you to listen to these words. I'm going to make one little comment on the Arab refugee problem, and then we're going to have some other songs to worship in that weren't on the schedule. A couple of them, and then our closing one. And these are Yahoo songs. But this is important to hear what they said. Okay, this little paragraph, that, and this to there. And I wanted a young Jewish person to read this. Because the promise is to you.
Proclamation.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me turn this on. The old guy has to press the buttons. There we go. Okay, we go.
Proclamation of Independence. Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, was the birthplace of the Jewish people. Here, their spiritual, religious, and political identity was shaped. Here, they first attained to statehood, created cultural values of national and universal significance, and gave the world the eternal Book of Books. On the 29th of November, 1947, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution calling forth the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Israel. The General Assembly required the inhabitants of Eretz Israel to take such steps as were necessary on their part for the implementation of that resolution. This recognition by the United Nations of the right of the Jewish people to establish their state is irrevocable. This right is the natural right of the Jewish people to be masters of their own fate, like all other nations in their own sovereign state. Accordingly, we, members of the People's Council, representatives of the Jewish community of Eretz Israel and of the Zionist movement, are here assembled on the day of the termination of the British mandate over Eretz Israel, and by the virtue of our natural and historic right, and on the strength of the resolution of the United Nations General Assembly, hereby declare the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Israel to be known as the State of Israel. We declare that, with effect from the moment of the termination of the mandate, being tonight, the eve of Sabbath,
Shabbat,
the 6th Iyar 5708, 15th of May 1948, until the establishment of the elected regular authorities of the state in accordance with the Constitution, which shall be adopted by the elected
British influence.
The elected assembly, not later than the 1st October 1948, the People's Council shall act as the Provisional Council of State, and this executive organ, the People's Administration, shall be the provisional government of the Jewish state, to be called Israel. This state of Israel will be open for Jewish immigration and for the ingathering of the exiles. It will foster the development of the country for the benefit of all its inhabitants. It will be based on freedom, justice, and peace, as envisioned by the prophets of Israel. It will ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all its inhabitants, irrespective of religion, race, or sex. It will guarantee freedom of religion, conscience, language, education, and culture. It will safeguard the holy places of all religions, and it will be faithful to the principles of the Charter of the United Nations. The State of Israel is prepared to cooperate with the agencies and representatives of the United Nations in implementing the resolution of the General Assembly of the 29th November 1947, and will take steps to bring about economic union with the whole of Eretz Israel. We will appeal to the United Nations to assist the Jewish people in the building up of its state and to receive the State of Israel into the Committee of Nations. We appeal in the very midst of the onslaught launched against us now for months to the Arab inhabitants of the State of Israel to preserve peace and participate in the upbuilding of the state on the basis of full and equal citizenship and due representation in all its provisional and permanent institutions. We extend our hand to all neighboring states and their peoples in an offer of peace and good neighborliness, and appeal to them to establish bonds of cooperation and mutual help with the sovereign Jewish people settled in its own land. The State of Israel is prepared to do its share in common effort for the advancement of the entire Middle East. We appeal to the Jewish people throughout the diaspora to rally around the Jews of Eretz Israel in the tasks of immigration and upbuilding and to stand by them in the great struggle for the realization of the age-old dream, the redemption of Israel. Placing our trust in the Almighty, we affix our signatures to this proclamation at this session of the Provisional Councils of State, on the soil of the homeland, in the city of Tel Aviv, on the Sabbath Eve, the fifth day of Iyar, 5708, 14th of May, 1948.
Thank you. In that, you can see where they're pushing all the Arabs out. Now, if that's true, how come then some Arabs I know have nice houses, really nice, and drive Mercedes and own jewelry stores? Were they pushed out? No, as you read this, what happened was this. The Arab countries, the five countries that were invading Israel, announced to the Arab population, get out right now. We're invading. Get out of our way. In 3 weeks, the war is over. You can come home, and it'll be our land, so on and so forth. That's what they said. The Israelis said, you know what? We have nothing against you. In fact, you get to be citizens of Israel. Pay taxes. Vote. Go to school. But if you do what they said and you leave, okay, or fight against us, you can't come back. If you stay, you are a citizen with all of its rights. You keep your land, you keep your houses. They made a decision. Those that left became the Palestinian refugees. Those that stayed are citizens of Israel with all rights. That's what happened. And if you see, when you read that, you'll see exactly who was told what and what took place. And unfortunately, families were divided. So the bottom line was that they offered equal citizenship to those in the land at that point in time. You don't hear that one. Well, looking at all this, I will have to say I'm guilty as charged. I am a Zionist, okay? Because I believe this book, and God is a Zionist. Let's stand up for what's biblical and truth. I was just kidding about the stand up. Go ahead, stand up. You may. And there's a lot of lies that are being told today. Stand for the truth. Now, I'm getting this out of the way. We've got a couple of special songs. The first one you'll love. The second one's in Russian. And I love the Russians that came in. Wonderful people. And then we'll end with Old Say Shalom. So you may dance to these if you want. And then Sandy's family eats first.
Oh, Davinu Chai.